Hello everyone and welcome to this new session of Memcast. My name is Christina Aquishu. I'm one of the Reno Registrars in Leicester and one of your MEMcast hosts. I'll be talking to you about peritoneal dialysis today, simplifying it to five general topics that I think you should know about in this form of renal replacement therapy. So I'm going to summarize the topics first. I thought I would help you in your medical training by just summarizing the most common encounters we have with peritoneal dialysis patients, as probably you wouldn't be met with a clinical situation in which you come across a peritoneal dialysis patient that often. So the things that I wanted you to know, the first common topic was what is peritoneal dialysis and how would we define the type of modality. Number two, I'm going to talk to you about a typical patient that chooses this form of renal replacement therapy. Number three would be complications and we'll be focusing on infections, especially peritoneal dialysis, peritonitis. Number four, we would talk about long-term complications of peritoneal dialysis, focusing on a very rare complication that you might find in MCQs for your MRCP. And number five, we'll talk about peritoneal dialysis failure and when patients are switched to hemodialysis. In brief, so let's begin. The first topic, what is peritoneal dialysis? As we mentioned in our previous podcast, peritoneal dialysis is a home therapy. The basic principle is that the patient's peritoneum is used as a semipermeable membrane for clearance of toxins and fluid. A catheter is inserted in the peritoneal cavity by a physician or a surgeon for the fluid to be infused, and solids diffuse slowly across the membrane, getting rid of waste products, what we call clearance. The fluid infused consists of a solution of electrolyte, a buffer to correct the metabolic acidosis like lactate or bicarbonate, and an osmotic agent to get rid of the extra fluid or achieve what we call ultrafiltration, which is either in the form of glucose or icodextrin. The two main types of peritoneal dialysis are CAPD, or continuous ambulatory peritoneal dialysis, when patients do manual exchanges at home during the day and usually leave an exchange on overnight, and APD, or automated peritoneal dialysis, where patients are connected to a machine that does the exchange whilst they are asleep. They can either be dry during the day, so not have any fluids on them, or they can have a fluid on for a longer dwell, and I'll go briefly through it later. So that's just an introduction in peritoneal dialysis. If you want to know more about the type of modalities, the treatment protocols or therapies that we use, please feedback on unusual social media channels and I can get one of the peritoneal dialysis consultants to give a detailed talk about it. Moving on to the second topic, I want to give you an idea of the typical patient on peritoneal dialysis. So patients that usually start peritoneal dialysis are most of the time independent and self-caring or have a supportive family that can facilitate the at-home therapy. There are forms of assisted APD in some centers where a specialized team starts the therapy at home for the patients and do an oversight of their treatment, like dealing with machine failures. Different modes of dialysis have been debated, with no mode showing a superiority over the other, comparing peritoneal dialysis and hemodialysis. A number of large observational studies have indicated a survival advantage for PD over HD for the initial 2 to 3 years of dialysis, with subsequent loss of the benefit or later advantage to hemodialysis. Peritoneal dialysis is particularly recommended in children and adults with residual kidney function and no other comorbidities. It's been shown that PD might be associated with better preservation of residual kidney function, and this might account for superior early outcomes of PD versus HD. Also, one benefit might come from preserving sites for vascular access which make them available later if a transfer to hemodialysis is required. This is extremely important for a patient with longer life expectancy that for reasons like not being suitable for a renal transplant or being very difficult to get a renal transplant, they will be on other forms of renal replacement therapy like hemodialysis or peritoneal dialysis, either for a very long period of time or the rest of their life. There is some evidence to suggest that initial treatment with peritoneal dialysis and subsequent transfer to hemodialysis might have a better outcome than treatment with a single dialysis modality. Though, as we spoke about in our previous podcast, the renal replacement therapy modality of choice is best decided by the patient in agreement and with support of their renal MDT. There are patients that might not be suitable for peritoneal dialysis, unfortunately, like patients with a hostile abdomen due to previous surgeries or abdominal stomas, patients with morbid obesity, or in some centers, patients with poorly controlled diabetes might be challenging to manage because of the high glucose-containing PD fluid. Also, an important aspect in managing a patient on peritoneal dialysis is urine output is monitored regularly as opposed to prevalent or long-term hemodialysis patients. Diuretics in their case, as opposed to hemodialysis patients, can actually increase urine volume and help with managing fluid overload, but not with toxin clearance. Ultrafiltration or fluid removal is dependent on factors like the osmotic agent and duration of dwell. A dwell is the time that the fluid stays in the peritoneum. Ultrafiltration might be increased by using dialysis fluid with higher concentration of glucose, and use shorter dwell times, and thus to allow less time for the absorption of glucose and loss of its osmotic effect. Ultrafiltration is also improved by using solutions like icodextrin for longer dwells as opposed to glucose. Okay, so moving on from typical features of the patients on peritoneal dialysis, the third topic I wanted to talk to you about is complications of peritoneal dialysis, focusing on infections. So most common peritoneal dialysis-related infections are exit site infections and PD peritonitis. Exit site infections can actually lead to peritonitis. That is why the catheter exit site is closely monitored by the patient and the renal MDT. Patients need to be trained in caring after their PD catheter and adhere to strict infection prevention rules when managing their peritoneal dialysis, monitored and supported by the renal home care team. Peritoneal dialysis peritonitis or PD peritonitis is defined by a clinical presentation of a PD patient with abdominal pain and cloudy dialysis effluent, and this should make any clinician concerned of PD peritonitis. PD fluid needs to be sent for microscopy urgently after a dwell time of at least 2 hours. The fluid is sent off by staff that is strictly trained in peritoneal dialysis, and these patients are usually signposted straight away to the renal team and need to be managed by them. I know there are certain situations where beds might not be available in district general hospitals, but the renal team is always available for managing a PD fluid send-off and treatment. So please do not try to do this yourselves, as it might actually aggravate things. So a dialysis sample with more than 100 vessel count, of which 50% are neutrophils, and the clinical presentation along with positive cultures, two of these factors need to be present for a diagnosis of peritoneal dialysis. Treatment, at least initially, is intraperitoneal antibiotics, and most common antibiotic use is vancomycin with close level monitoring. This specific antibiotic is given every 3 to 7 days, depending on the levels, and this again is managed by the renal team. Oral antibiotics are usually added. A duration of antibiotics varies from at least two weeks to 3 weeks, or sometimes more, according to the isolated culprit. Mild episodes can be treated as outpatients in renal day case settings. Unfortunately, there are patients with multiple episodes, and in some cases, like fungal infections or non-responding mycobacterial infections, catheter needs to be removed. But again, this is a decision of the renal MDT. Moving on to our second to last topic, number four is long-term complications, focusing on the most common ones and one of the rare ones that you might come across in your exams. Surgical issues with catheter malposition. Fortunately, this is not as common as we think, and this can be managed sometimes by conservative care, like managing constipation. Moving on, constipation is actually a long-term complication of peritoneal dialysis. It's more common in older age and is multifactorial due to effects of dialysate on bowel motility, low fiber content of diet, medication, and also electrolyte imbalance. You would note that if you check the drug chart of a peritoneal dialysis patient, most are on laxatives and are encouraged to have multiple bowel movements a day. Constipation also leads to reduced ultrafiltration and drainage and increased risk of peritonitis due to multiplication of bad enteric organisms. The rare complication that I wanted to mention and you might come across in exam is encapsulating peritoneal sclerosis, which is a rare but serious complication. In the year 2000, the International Society of Peritoneal Dialysis defined EPS, or encapsulating peritoneal sclerosis, as a rare clinical syndrome that's characterized by intermittent, persistent, or recurrent intestinal obstruction caused by diffuse adhesion, thickened and sclerosing peritoneum. If obstruction doesn't resolve, intestinal mural ischemia and peritoneal adhesion may further develop, resulting in infection, bloody dialysate, systemic inflammatory response, sepsis, and unfortunately death. You can understand by the definition that clinical features comprise bowel obstruction, abdominal pain, hemoperitoneum, weight loss, diarrhea, and malnutrition. Diagnosis of EPS is through a combination of clinical and radiological features. CT has the modality of greatest diagnostic value and features consistent of peritoneal calcification, bowel obstruction, and thickening of peritoneal membranes are diagnostic. Treatment is surgical in experienced centers. Earlier studies described a high mortality rate, but more recent experience suggests excellent surgical outcome in experienced centers. We do see patients post-EPS that are on long-term total parenteral nutrition and do well, but malnutrition and sepsis are causes of high mortality in severe cases. One of the other rare but long-term complication, or sometimes even patients that haven't been on a peritoneal dialysis for a long time can get, is hydrothorax. Fluid mostly in the right pleural space that can be caused by the diaphragmatic leak. So you might come across this if you're doing respiratory medicine or during your own calls. And the last topic that I wanted to speak to you about briefly is PD switch to hemodialysis. So some of the patients that either have been on peritoneal dialysis for a longer period of time or for a short period of time but have complications require to switch modalities to hemodialysis. Some of the factors are related to the patient, like the patients might choose to switch to hemodialysis due to convenience or to not being able to support their peritoneal dialysis. And some of the factors are related to peritoneal dialysis process itself, like ultrafiltration failure, which is an important cause of PD mortality failure. Defined as a net fluid removal below a certain value during function and tests done in PD clinics. Another factor for switch to hemodialysis, as we briefly mentioned before, is recurrent PD peritonitis. And another factor is mechanical complications. For example, malpositions of the peritoneal dialysis tube that's not responding to conservative management, like constipation management with laxatives, or unable to be resolved by surgeons. So this is a brief tour of peritoneal dialysis modality. If you, as I said previously, if you want to know more about it, feedback through our usual social media accounts. As a reminder, you can find out our question of the week and get details of our MRCP or basis videos in the future on our social media accounts at mem.cast on Instagram or mem_cast on X or previous Twitter. Thank you so much for joining us today, and join us next week for a new episode.